Welcome to the Smichael Speaks podcast. This is the space and the place for leadership learning. I'm Joanne Smichael. I'm a speaker, an educator, a consultant, and a forever student of the world. Enjoy this episode. On today's episode of Brain Matters, I am continuing my conversation with T. Teresa Iyett. She has early onset Alzheimer's disease at 58 years old, and she's facing a pivot that is almost unimaginable for a powerhouse like her. Welcome back, T.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to be back.
Last time we talked, we discussed the behaviors that led you to your doctor and then revealed that something was very wrong. It was Kate, your daughter, who was the person who knew something was really wrong and told your husband it was time to get you to the doctor. And then you had the journey of the cognitive testing, the neurologists. You know where I'm going with that.
It's a tough word to say.
Neurologist visits and so many other things began. But before any of that, you had COVID. And I know that there's no research data, or I don't think there is, linking COVID to Alzheimer's early onset. But can you just talk about that experience and what your thoughts kind of are? And just talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, so I had COVID in November of 2020. So, you know, right in the thick of it all. And I wasn't on a respirator, didn't go to the hospital. It was not necessarily the worst. People had it worse. Let me just say that. I was home in bed. I felt like somebody had, you know, hit me over and over again with the bat. I was really exhausted, sort of the whole deep cold symptoms, but it just felt like a really, really bad flu, you know, and then I got over it. However, after that experience with COVID, had real problems with brain fog and word recall. Mm-hmm. So I would be in the middle of a conversation with someone and I just couldn't remember the next word of what I wanted to say. It was in here. It was in my head. I knew it was in my head. Couldn't get it from my head to out of my mouth. And the brain fog was just, I just felt, you know, I'd be like, I know this. Why is this so hazy? I've done this. I know this. But again, just kept chalking it up to long COVID. It'll go away. But it didn't, you know. I thought, oh my gosh, I've been clear of the disease for 6 months now. Why am I having this? Been clear of the disease for a year. Why am I having this? And I looked around for studies. I was like, let me get in a study group. Maybe I'll get some data. And there was a study at NIH in Bethesda. I applied, was accepted. And I was in the study for a year and a half, and then we moved out of the area. And unfortunately, I had to leave the study because NIH was too far away for me to continue to participate. But there was a physical portion of the test and a mental portion of the study. And the physical thing was really for people, I guess, who had had real lung trouble and all of that kind of stuff. I did fine. My lung function was great. My movement was great. Everything was fine. I never felt confident about the intellectual stuff. A lot of the tests that they did with me then are similar to the ones that they did for me to reach my diagnosis. So that's really ironic. But, you know, it would be like, tell me, they would show me a pattern and they'd say after, you know, 10 seconds, they take the pattern away and they would tell me the pattern. You say, repeat the pattern. So if it was apple, pear, banana, grapes, I looked at it. And then when they took it away, I had to be able to say apple, pear, banana, grapes. And I could do that until it got to be over a certain number of items, or it was, they gave me a picture of scrambled up things, and then I had to put the things back in the order that I saw them, and I couldn't really remember to do that. And they weren't complicated, they weren't difficult. I just could not get my brain to put things in the correct order. So yeah, again, I don't know that there's any definitive research that having COVID is a precursor to potentially developing Alzheimer's disease. I'm not a scientist, but there's lots of people who had COVID who aren't facing the same things that I am. So I'm not saying there's a connection. I'm just saying that after COVID is when I started to notice the brain fog and the word recall. And I wonder if there is a connection there, but I'm not a scientist. And at some point, somebody will figure it out, hopefully.
Well, we hope so, because research that requires NIH and other research. So
yeah.
Looks like we're going backwards in that direction, but
yeah, I mean, I believe that government participation in health related research leads to a healthier population. Why wouldn't you want that? Yeah. Why wouldn't you want that for your people? Stemming the growth of a disease and other illnesses, it's a good thing. And yeah, if it's not directly impacting you, it will impact someone you love.
Somebody
it will.
You know.
It yeah. will. So I think that recently the cuts have been heartless and not grounded in any real review of program success or failure. That's my personal opinion. I just think that this kind of research is nonpartisan. It's for all of us. There shouldn't be a political bias or anything related to wanting your people, the world's population, our population, to be healthier.
Yeah.
I mean, we now have measles again in our country. Mm-hmm. We had eradicated the disease. So going backwards to me isn't helpful. I think personal choice, you absolutely have personal choice, but it shouldn't be, to take a population backwards should not be the aim of a government. And that's my opinion. So
I share that opinion. You have been determined to keep working, mm-hmm. keep doing yoga, keep staying fit, keep enjoying the beach.
Yeah.
So when did you make the transition from all the emotional shock to, oh, no, I'm keeping my life. I'm yeah. doing what I do. And that's question one. But the next question is the yoga connection. Because I was surprised when we had lunch and you said, oh, yeah, I keep doing yoga. And when you said some of the reasons. So can we talk about those things?
Yeah, sure. So my yoga practice has become particularly important to me. And I should sort of preface it by saying, if someone had said to me 2 or 3 years ago, you're going to do yoga 4 times a week and you're going to love it, I would have laughed in their face. Because every time, like, yoga in my mind was always like, I should be doing yoga. All the healthy people do yoga. Yoga seems important. But every time I would take a yoga class, I was put off by something. The poses are too hard. I'm too awkward. I'm whatever. The teacher is this. The class is that. The women or the men or the people in the group seem catty, or they've been doing yoga longer than me and I'm not fitting in. All of the stuff. But I belong to a studio here in Bethany Beach, and there is something about the studio that was different. Mm-hmm. Before the studio even opened, stuff I saw in the paper, the signs they had up, the flags coming soon, the Instagram posts that I saw about, oh, coming soon. There was, I don't know if it was the universe, God, whatever. I just was drawn to their vibe. And so when they opened up registration, I signed up for a whole year without even taking a class.
Wow. You were serious about this.
Well, I figured if I sign up for a year, then I have to go.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Right? And so I have been going to yoga for a year now regularly because our studio just celebrated the 1 year anniversary. I go 6 a.m. yoga, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and they do a Sunday, what I call Sunday service, for me, because I'm not particularly a church goer. So yoga has also become an opportunity for some reflection and practice of faith. So I go on Sundays, and that's my church. And yoga, the mind-body connection in yoga is no joke. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're in a 90-degree room for 60 minutes and you have an instructor telling you to go from downward-facing dog to mountain pose to skandasana to... Your brain has got to pay attention because it is a flow. I've been to some yoga classes where they move from pose to pose and you hold the pose. Mm-hmm. The classes I go to are a flow. So you're going from one pose right into another, and you can't anticipate. You've got to be in the moment. You've got to listen. And it has made a huge impact on me in terms of an exercise. It's been a brain exercise in addition to a physical exercise. So yeah, yoga has really made a difference. And I still run, all of the things I did. So exercise is really important. And one of the things my doctor said to me was stop eating garbage, don't drink alcohol, and exercise.
No so, more wine.
So no alcohol, no, I do yoga, and I did move to a brain-focused diet. So I'm doing all the things she's asking me to do. So,
okay. Well, that's
cool. Yeah.
I didn't know until I guess maybe a year and a half ago when I got on the board of the American Brain Foundation, that there really is a powerful link between nutrition and brain health. I did not know that until then.
Yeah.
Yeah, serious link there.
Yeah.
I want to just switch gears for a minute to self-advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
You've done self-advocacy at work. You do it with your physicians and in every realm of your life. What's most challenging about being a self-advocate now?
That I didn't necessarily put myself first before, if that makes sense. I'm a wife, I'm a mother. I'm a busy executive who thinks of her team as family. I'm committed to the mission of our organization. I'm community focused, you know. So the idea of turning inward or saying no to things that I would have normally said yes to, I think has been challenging, but that is self-advocacy. That saying no is self-advocacy. It's when you think of self-advocacy, you think of, or I think of, calling people and, you know, pushing for treatment or getting into a study or a class or whatever. For me, that self-advocacy was more about getting myself back. Because I had already given so much of who I am, and I still do, to work, to friends, to family, to anything else. And so for me to say, nope, you got to put yourself first, start saying no to stuff. How does it serve? And that's been hard, really, really hard. So, because I love people, you know, and I like talking to them and being with them, and, you know, to say no to a request or an activity because it's not really right for me anymore Whereas maybe before I would have said, well, I don't know, I don't like that, but I like that person, so I'm willing to help them, you know. Mm-hmm. To say no has been important. So I'm learning.
And you'll continue to learn.
Yeah.
You'll continue to learn. You definitely will. Do you see yourself as an educator about the disease or about brain health? Do you see that as part of your new role? Because I'm sure people ask you, well, what is early onset Alzheimer's?
Yeah. Well,
how'd you get that? So do you see yourself as an educator?
Maybe. I'm so used to being behind the scenes working with people whose job it is to educate. You and I have worked together. I understand what you do and how you teach and how you share your knowledge and all that goes into it and all the heart and energy that you put into the work that you do. I don't know. It'd be a big shift for me. It would be formalizing something I already do organically, right? Like if somebody asks me a question or needs help or whatever, I just naturally put that out there from a place of love and encouragement and support. But to formalize that, oh, that seems like a lot. Especially when the idea of dealing with my short-term memory and being in front of people, I don't know. It's a lot. I need to get used to being who I am in this current phase of my life and saying goodbye to some things before I welcome any new things.
The next thing.
Yeah.
We had talked about the Alzheimer's support groups all being for caregivers and the need for Alzheimer's support groups for people with Alzheimer's. And, you know, that's a wide open space for advocacy.
Yeah.
Wide open space.
Yeah. Although I got to say, there's a part of me that's like, yeah, but I want someone else to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. Yeah.
But I
want
it.
Someone else to do that because I'm doing this. I know, I'm doing Alzheimer's in real time.
Yeah.
So when you run into people at the doctor's office or just run into people who are also facing this early onset diagnosis, what do you say?
I haven't really spoken to anybody else who has the diagnosis. I don't know how to say this. I'm just going to say it. I go to my doctor and everyone in the office, in the waiting room is, you know, served in Vietnam or from World War II. I mean, they're all a lot older than me in this situation. And I've been kind of timid to really talk to them or mm-hmm. introduce myself and also I think there's a part of me that's like, this is their thing. They're going through it. I'm going through it. Do I want people coming up to me and talking to me? I'm not really sure. I've kept it very personal for me. I've not really spoken to anybody else in any age group really that is going through what I'm going through. I think I was hopeful that a support group would exist so that it would be something I could naturally plug into. I feel like I am out of place in what is the stereotypical cohort of people with Alzheimer's, which is people who are much older than me.
Okay.
Because in my head, that's when you get Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
So for example,
most people's heads.
Yeah. For example, I did a functional health experience with one of those online concierge medicine platforms. And one of the things they did was they did my DNA. And then we sat down and we talked about all the different things on my DNA that were anomalies isn't the right word, but were things to think about. You know, it's like, so on this gene, you have this allele and it means this as a potential four. And one of the things is on one part of my, one of my genes, I had the marker for Alzheimer's. And in the so I was like, okay, my grandfather had it late in his life. It's a possibility when you get older, you know, that older people get it. I was okay. I was like, okay, fine. Cause the person who was reviewing the results said, yeah, you'll probably have it and near the end of your life. And I was like, great. If that's when it comes and it's near the end of my life, that makes sense in my mind. To me, people who have Alzheimer's disease are older. So when I got the diagnosis at 58, I was like, well, wow, that was a really weird reading of my DNA. Yeah.
It was off by 30 years. This is supposed to come at 85, not 58.
Yeah. So anyway, it was, I don't know. I haven't really spoken to anybody about support groups or anything like that.
What's keeping you hopeful?
What's keeping me hopeful is that although we are in a period of review on the way we fund research and research priorities, I am hopeful that because this is a disease that does impact people across all spectrums, color, finances, intellect, that it will stay near the top of a list of things that we continue to care about funding. And that's selfish because I know there are a lot of other diseases out there that are going to suffer. Mainstream disease sounds like a terrible thing to say, but there are mainstream diseases that everyone is familiar with and gets research funding and people have walks for and all of this kind of stuff. And then there's a lot of other diseases that are not quite as visible and research dollars are not quite as available because they're a little bit more niche to a certain segment of the population or whatever. Doesn't make them any less important.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I would challenge you and say that Alzheimer's is a pretty mainstream disease nowadays.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty mainstream. Yeah. Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia they're not rare.
Yeah.
They're not rare. Yeah. You know, you mentioned research, and the next time we talk, I want to talk about that. I know you have continue to consider studies that you can participate in. And I want to go more into that. So next time, that's what I want to talk about. You good with that?
You got it.
I'm grateful for you. Thank you for spending this time. Thank you.
I'm happy to be here with you.
Thank you for listening. Be sure that you subscribe and share. You can get more leadership learning from my YouTube channel and by following me on Instagram. Reach out when you're looking for a speaker to energize your next event. Reach out when you need curated leadership learning for your organization. Reach out when you're ready for consulting that will help your organization fulfill its potential. I'm Joanne Smichael, and thank you for tuning in.